Hello boys and girls, I hope you're all keeping well, safe and positive at this time. A couple of weeks ago I spoke to Akbar Butt from Hong Kong based hospitality group Black Sheep Restaurants. They're a huge operator in Hong Kong with a really diverse portfolio from casual dining with burger bars and pizzerias to a bit more high-end fine dining with two of their sites holding Michelin stars. With a total of 25 sites and nearly 1,000 employees, Akbar gave us a great insight into operating this chain after the lockdown was lifted in Hong Kong, the company culture, and then pivoting with the launch of their delivery app. I hope you enjoy, and I look forward to hearing from you.
My name's Akbar Butt. I am the COO for Black Sheep Restaurants. I guess most recently before coming to the world of hospitality, I worked in New York with Barclays Bank. So I was, you know, headed for a career on the trading floor, and then maybe I'll, and, you know, just long story short, you know, me and Austin, we have a personal relationship. We go back with, you know, family and friends. And as a result of that, it was a matter of time for me to come and join Black Sheep.
Okay, good, good. And to majority of the people in the UK who've not been to Hong Kong or never traveled to Hong Kong, just explain to us what Black Sheep Restaurant Group is for people in the UK.
Well, we are a Hong Kong based hospitality group. You know, we see ourselves beyond restaurants, even though at the moment we have 25 restaurants. We are very ambitious, and it's just a matter of time that we would expand beyond restaurants. But we are Hong Kong based. We have 25 restaurants, very ambitious group of people. We have one international restaurant over in Shanghai. Yeah. And I think what makes us unique compared to a lot of the other groups is that we cater to the broad spectrum. So, you know, you have your popular, reliable, you know, friendly neighborhood joint. So we have Motrino, our Neapolitan pizzeria, Burger Circus, you know, which is a burger joint. But at the same time, at the other end of the spectrum, we've got the fine dining restaurants and the Michelin starred ones, such as Milan and New Punjab Club, which is where we're very proud of, you know, also, I guess, being able to say that, you know, New Punjab Club is the first Punjabi restaurant to have a Michelin star.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's it looked really impressive. And was that last year you achieved the star, or the year before now?
That was the year before, I believe. I apologize. I have to, you know, time just goes by so fast.
I understand. But you've really got a real mix of brands and offerings from, you know, like you're saying, the burger places, the pizzerias, and then moving into the more fine dining. Was that something that was planned, or is that just natural progression of how things panned out?
I think it would be more of a natural progression. You know, the way we see ourselves as storytellers, and you know what, no story is probably the same, you know, and the restaurants are an extension of us. It really comes through a lot of different ways. It could be by chance, it could be inspirational. You know, every story just has its own sort of a connection. Like, you know, Chris Mark, for instance, you know, he has a love for, you know, always being a culinary person, opening a steakhouse. Yeah. And Austin's family, they breed horses. So Buenos Aires Polo Club was born as a result of that, which is an Argentinian steakhouse.
Nice.
You know, but there have been other cases such as, you know, I guess you could take New Punjab Club, which, you know, Austin, when, you know, being a proud Pakistani, a Punjabi, you know, it sort of pays homage to sort of his culture. And mine as well, being a Pakistani as well. But, you know, that was something that he wanted to do in that way as well. So not necessarily, it's just very natural. You know, tomorrow we could do something completely different as a result of just how, you know, we wanted to tell a story, felt a connection, or felt inspired by something.
Yeah, no, that's good. That, I think that's really good. Okay, well, look, as you're aware, the planet is under a global pandemic at the moment. In the UK, we're currently on lockdown, and this is I think this is week six for us. So, you know, everything's changed. Everything's completely, you know, I'm trying to keep busy working from home, but, you know, there's, it's a very different way of life at the moment. But just explain to us the coronavirus, how it affected yourselves over the past couple of months and the effects on the hospitality industry in Hong Kong.
I think it does go without saying that the effects have been very devastating. You know, there's just no way that we can sugarcoat it or say it with positivity, other than, of course, there is some light at the end of the tunnel.
Having
said that, you know, I mean, it's common news about restaurants closing down and, you know, jobless rate going up and all those things. But I would say, just to give a number, like last summer in Hong Kong, we had around 15,000 restaurants. And our prediction is that only 2/3 would survive it by this summer. So you're looking at about that number dropping to about 10,000.
Wow.
So there will be, you know, some serious repercussions as a result of it.
And I remember a couple of years ago when I was there, someone saying to me that the number of restaurants in Hong Kong was around 20,000 or just under. So it's that's almost a 50% drop over the past probably 3 or 4 years, isn't it?
That is correct. Yes. You know, it's just the competitive space, the, you know, the growing, you know, the inflation and the prices, and then just the economic impact of the COVID-19 situation was, I guess, just the final blow.
So how has the past 12 months been then for you guys? Because to own and run 25 restaurants is a huge commitment. You know, you obviously had huge protests, I think, last summer, which you know, I know from family and friends, just trying to get on the tube was hard work, and then also a lot of roads and things were closed. There was a curfew put in place. How did all that affect the business?
You know, again, no different from the COVID-19 situation. So, of course, we were coming right off of the heels of social unrest in Hong Kong. Business was already down. It definitely had an impact towards us. And then finally, I think, you know, coming right from over there into COVID-19 is where it became a matter of survival for a lot of us. And revenues definitely are down about 50%. But what has sort of benefited us is, you know, we've done some great work. We have some guests that are there for us. You know, they want to support us. They're our champions. They believe in the work that we're doing. Some of our team members have done some great things, you know. So, like, the status quo no longer works, you know.
Yeah.
Delivery became a big part of the business, you know, sort of a lifeboat for the business as well. I don't know if you had a chance to read about our COVID-19 playbook that we put out as well.
Really, comprehensive, really impressive. I was, that, you know, I was emailing Emma and I was discussing that with her. It really was very comprehensive and really helpful.
So, you know, it's basically, business is impacted by 50%. You know, revenues are down. The last 12 months have been very tough. What I guess what we'd like to say is that the status quo no longer works, and this is the norm, and people have to accept it. And doing things such as having these protocols, having, you know, being creative and proactive around the business, trying to find other revenue sources, focusing on the bottom line a bit more, has allowed us to survive. So I think we as a company, you know, as a community, embraced, you know, what was going around us and weren't going to wait until things got better, but accepted them as the current scenario, which has helped us survive. And Hong Kong is a resilient city, and we believe, you know, with the good work that we've been doing, we will come out of this, you know, all right.
And I was reading this morning that, I don't know if you've seen it, but Starbucks put something out saying that they're forecasting their recovery to be in China and Hong Kong to be around the September mark for them. And you know, I was reading that they were down by 35%, but they forecast an annual, you know, dip by 25%. And Starbucks is a global monster. Well, you guys are saying you're down by 50%. Do you think those figures are realistic from Starbucks, or?
You know, given that they are in a different business model, I wouldn't be surprised, because I am drinking my cup of coffee every morning as well.
Okay,
you know,
good.
And generally it is a takeaway product, so I think they might be a bit more inelastic to what the situation is. You know, we've definitely felt it more due to having some of the premium restaurants, you know, some of the social distancing rules, which we believe are here to stay. So, for instance, for Hong Kong, we can't have more than 50% capacity at the moment, or we have to have people, you know, spread out 1 meter wide. And space is such a luxury in Hong Kong, which makes this situation unique for us, where,
exactly.
you know, every square footage is being, you know, maximized, you know, or used to the fullest. Like, you know, in just 2 square feet, we would just think of maybe setting up, you know, a station or something. So I think as a result of that, with the non-typical takeaway and dine-in model in a very tight space, is where we felt the most impact to us.
I can imagine. And, you know, and I guess food produced in a fine dining restaurant doesn't travel well for takeaway and deliveries.
No, it does not. But again, it's very interesting, because we did not consider this ever before. For instance, you know, New Punjab Club and Balloon are Michelin starred restaurants. They are on our Go delivery app. We have been offering delivery, but that's where, you know, we go back to saying we've gotten a bit more. We're treating it with the respect, or, you know, the care and love that segment actually deserves. So, for example, Burger Circus and Neapolitan Pizzeria Motrino, they are your typical sort of delivery models. You go on the app, you place an order, and you get, you know, your food at your house.
Yeah.
But our premium restaurants, you have to order 24 hours in advance.
Okay.
So that, you know, our chefs can actually spend time to properly make sure that the, you know, that premium price that you're paying, and you get the food the way you should at your door.
Well, I guess that makes sense. To, you know, if the product has to be premium, you have to give it the respect it needs, and let that person produce it how it needs to be produced.
Exactly. And not to take away anything from you know, the few diners that we do have in the restaurant as well, you know, because it does cause a bit of a disruption to their model.
Yeah, of course. Okay, great. Well, look, it sounds like you guys are being really positive in this situation, and trying to soldier on the best way you can with social distancing. And and I take it you've not had to close any of the restaurants at this stage.
No, that's one thing that we're very proud of, you know, because our people, you know, our culture, our community, it's at the cornerstones. It's sort of at the center of everything that we do. You know, we understand that, you know, this is a tough time for our community, for our people. And we're very proud to say that up till now, we haven't had a single person that's been laid off in a single restaurant that we've closed. And everything that we're doing in our power right now is not to let those two things happen. Of course, you know, there are cost-cutting measures and a lot of things that we're doing around the space. But, you know, I think if anything keeps, you know, our co-founders and all of our leadership team up at night, is to make sure that we get through this with everybody keeping their jobs, number one. And number two, also everybody staying healthy. So making sure that we follow all the proper health protocols.
Fantastic. Well, look, that's a great position to be in, and you should be very proud of yourselves that you've managed to do that, because you know, it's you hear horror stories from around the world of restaurant chains, even you know, big reputable restaurants and chains in London that have basically said, look, we're going to call it a day, and we're making you know, we're making huge redundancies. So the fact that you've managed to keep all the doors open, keep all your staff employed, keep everyone healthy, it's a great achievement.
Thank you. We definitely are very proud of being able to do that. Yeah, it's again, you know, the great work that all our team are doing, and everybody doing their bit and understanding it. So everyone is on board with it.
Good, good. Okay, great. Well, let's rewind slightly, Akbar. Tell us where you grew up, where you were born, where you grew up, and how that was.
Sure. Originally, of course, I'm Pakistani. My parents are both from Pakistan, but I was born and raised in Bangkok, Thailand, because my father, he had businesses. Originally, he was in the carpets, handmade rug business. So he had set up shop in Thailand and in Hong Kong. So I'd spent a lot of my childhood in Thailand, in Bangkok. And then in my early teens, I had moved over to Lahore, Punjab. Which has been one of the best years of my life to be in touch with my roots, you know, and sort of be in sync with my culture. Although I don't follow cricket as much as Asif does, I would like to. And he gives me a hard time about that always. After that, I was just in Hong Kong for about a year or two until I went off to college in the US, settled down in New York, and then finally made my way back over here.
And just going back a bit, look, you know, I've not been to Lahore for a few years, and I was due to go this year, but it's a very fun city. There's always something going on. There's lots of, it's a colourful city. It's something very different to Hong Kong, isn't it?
Oh, it definitely is. You know, the Punjabi culture, you know, sometimes even in language-wise, you know, people say that Punjabi sounds a bit more crude or a bit more loud, you know.
But absolutely. It's,
Punjabi people are very emotional, you know, and that's where Asim or I, we get our emotions from as well, you know. It's a very bubbly, loud, you know, that's why I think I probably didn't move to hospitality until a couple of years ago, but being Punjabi, it was always in my DNA. That is one thing which is very true to the Punjabi culture.
Yeah.
And people really, that's the one thing that people take away is that how welcoming everybody is over there, to the point where some people sometimes can also get offended, but it's, you know, with good intention. So like if, you know, you would go to somebody's house and, you know, you say that you've just had lunch, they will do their best to, you know, force something down your throat to, you know, they have to feed you before leaving their house or anything. And
definitely,
even if it offends you, you know, they want to be a good host to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, good. And then you moved from New York to Hong Kong. I guess very similar cities, but the culture and the people are very different.
Definitely very different, different industries as well, you know. I guess, well, one thing, of course, I do respect in both places is, you know, the big cities, they're moving fast, lots of opportunities, you know, and a lot of smart people, you know, a lot of, it's sort of like a melting pot in both places. New York has its own sort of like charm. I still miss it as well. So it's like saying the grass is greener. When I was in New York, I was missing Hong Kong a lot. While I'm here, I'm missing New York a lot as well.
That's a true traveler's problem.
It is, yes.
Okay, good. Well, okay. So explain to us how the Black Sheep Restaurant Group started, and tell us a bit about the co-founders.
Sure. So Asim, who originally is from Pakistan, he has a background in finance. His father, you know, his family actually has been in Hong Kong for probably about 100 years now. So, you know, he's three generations deep into Hong Kong.
Okay.
And Chris Mark, he's originally Canadian. He has a culinary background. Can't remember, but he's been over a decade in Hong Kong as well. He's been here for quite some time too.
Yeah.
So back in the day, both Chris and Austin, they used to work for another restaurant group where Chris used to be the culinary director.
Okay.
And Austin, previously, he worked in New York in finance. He was on the trading floor as well, I believe. And at some point, he decided to move back to, you know, Hong Kong, be with his family, and felt more like hospitality was his calling.
Yeah.
And when he joined the same group which Chris was in, you know, Chris just sees this young lad walk in on the floor, and he looks to, you know, one of his colleagues, and he just said that, you know, I could make you a bet that this kid won't survive a day.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think the story goes, Austin did make a couple of mistakes or something, had a rough night, He has a lot of determination, and he showed up the next day as well. And then Chris walked up to him, and you know, the first thing he said was, "I lost money because of you." So they went off. They went off to actually one of the best starts. But you know, with time, over a few glasses of wine, they finally reached some common grounds, and realized that they share some common goals and dreams, and wanted to build this sort of community-based hospitality group with very strong values. And 2012 is when they ventured off and started their first restaurant.
That's good. And it's quite a big story, synonymous with people who work and live in Hong Kong. They've all got they all have some type of connection to one of your restaurants, and I think that's probably down to the spaces they've created or the culture.
It is. It definitely is, and that's why we say, that our restaurants are an extension of us, or somehow we are storytellers, and there are some connections. Just for myself, for instance, New Punjab Club. When I used to be a toddler, I used to visit my father's carpet shop and watch him sell carpets. That is the space where New Punjab Club is now.
Yeah.
Wow. And the tandoors that we have are from Austin's father's restaurants from the 1980s. His father used to run a prominent restaurant in the 80s called the Mobile Room, which sort of also inspired him, and where he gets his hospitality sort of blood from as well.
Good. Okay. So it's it's got a great story behind it, hasn't it? So it's really impressive and quite intoxicating, I guess.
It is, yeah. It definitely is, and I'm sure if I just sit and start talking about every single restaurant, there's going to be a story and a connection for somebody within our team, from with our chefs and our leadership team, and somebody in some way.
Good. And the company that you've created, or the founders have created, a great company culture. In terms of you've got a real mixture of brands, and how was that culture created?
I think it really does start from Chris and Austin, where culture really, it's easy to, I wouldn't call it easy, but culture can be defined and maintained when you're a smaller team, when you're a single restaurant.
Yeah.
And as you get bigger and bigger, the responsibility of managing that has to be passed on to, the leadership team and more people. I'm not saying that the message can sort of sometimes get diluted or, misinterpreted, but you have to be very, careful about how the message is being passed and making sure that everybody is aligned with it. And that is the one thing that I think where Black Sheep's secret sauce is, and we've been very good at, is that, going back to what I said about our people, our culture, our community, that's at the center of everything.
Yeah.
And, we don't make compromise over there in any single way, where we don't put our people in harm's way, where, it's a perfect example of this time where our people have this trust and faith in us, where we know that nobody is going to also leave us, because they know that they're going to be looked after as well.
Yeah.
So a very small example is where in one of our restaurants, we had somebody that tested positive for the virus, but that was not at our restaurants. They later on tested positive, but as a result of that, we closed down our restaurant. We did not open for 2 weeks. We followed all the protocols. We made sure every team member was quarantined. We got them all tested, there was no impact in any sort of way to them. And we wanted to make sure everyone was kept in arms. So I'm very proud to say that not a single one of them actually tested positive. They were all clear, and very grateful of how they were looked after. We are very proud of coming through that very positively.
Good. I guess what I'm hearing from you, it's a real family kind of Asian values culture that you've created, in terms of you've tried to create a huge family.
Definitely, it definitely is. So we're getting close to 1,000 strong people, but at the same time, it feels like it's just a single restaurant with 10 people in that way. We're just, you know, everyone speaks the same language. Everyone knows each other. Everyone, you know, helps out each other. You know, somebody's helping someone, you know, move things from their house or, you know, personal things. It's the lines are very blurred between, you know, work and personal life, and everyone is just like a family.
Good, good. Well, that's really impressive, because that's something you can never bottle and sell. So if you've managed to create it, it's quite an impressive achievement.
Yeah, we definitely are very proud, and we keep it front and center as well. So we make sure to remind ourselves of what our core values are, and then anything that we're doing, we sort of you know, examine it through that lens to make sure that, you know, we're not compromising it in any way, and, you know, it sticks to it.
Good, good. Okay. I believe from Emma that one of the main things you're working on is the Go delivery service at the moment. Just explain to us what is that, and in this country we have Deliveroo and Uber Eats. I don't know if you've got Uber Eats and Deliveroo out in Hong Kong, but just explain to us what Go is and how it works.
So I guess the main difference between Go and the rest of the aggregators would be where we own the entire ecosystem. We own the entire experience. So from, you know, producing, you know, and making the food to packaging it and to delivering it to the door of the guests. So, you know, what we wanted to do was, we felt that there was this sort of a gap where, you know, sometimes quality could be compromised or the experience could be compromised. You can't really, I would say, replace the experience of the four walls in paper bag to a person.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there is a market for it. There is a need for it. But we also recognize that you cannot compromise the quality in any way as well. So we wanted to have the full ownership of that experience as well. But the second piece also is where, you know, I don't know what would be the best way, but wouldn't say, like, you know, you read about hand sanitizers these days being expensive and masks and things like those, and 30% aggregator fees or even higher at a time like this, restaurants can't survive, you know. So this is, you know, sort of like, that's why we've also, I don't know if you recently heard about our announcement where, in order to help our community, we actually said that we will onboard 10 restaurants without charging any onboarding fees or any other sort of delivery fees to them. And they can voluntarily, you know, pay for a portion of any of our delivery costs.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
And this will probably be through around the end of the summer. And it's also in some ways to create this awareness around where, you know, people usually they place an order from an aggregator saying that, you know, they would like to help the restaurants during the tough times, but if the aggregator is taking 30% of fees, it's not really helping the restaurants. So you know, the way to go is to directly go to the restaurants, to place a call to them if they have a delivery service, and not go through the convenience of, you know, through an app. I know it's harder to place a call, but that's what's really helping the restaurants. And then on the other side, we also encourage our restaurant peers to have more honest conversations with the guests as well, and to let them know that, you know, it is a tough time. And if they really, you know, would like to have some sort of assistance or help in this time, the right way is to receive those phone calls directly. But it also doesn't take much, you know, because, you know, we were early on in the game where we recognized this is pre-COVID or anything like that, where delivery is a service that we wanted to provide as a quality product to our guests.
Yeah.
But even at a time like this, it doesn't take much. You know, you could just upload a PDF document, have a WhatsApp number, a dedicated line, and people, you know, that are your true champions. And, you know, I'm sure you have a list of 10 places that you crave at sometimes at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And if there's a number, you could call them and they will just bring it to your door. You would certainly do that.
Yeah, and that's what's happening in the UK at the moment. You know, restaurants who've never done delivery service or collection or takeaway have almost been forced into this just because of the current situation, and for them to keep some income is better than nothing, I guess.
Correct. Yep.
So that's good. And and do you see that being a permanent offering now going forward? The Go delivery service.
Yes, I mean, in our case, it all prior to this moment, we had already started Go, but you know, it was for two reasons: more because of the aggregator fees, and secondly, you know, not to discount any of, I guess, the qualitative side of it to get the right experience to the guests. But having said that, you know, we believe that the effects of COVID-19 are here to stay for some time, you know. So what I mean to say is that some form of social distancing will be over here. This is going to be the new norm. And so restaurants that have never considered delivery before as well, or folks that never considered having delivery to their home before, now that they have experienced it, I think in some way there it has created a lasting market for that as well. It's an extra source of revenue for the restaurants. It's a extra means of convenience for the consumers as well. So, you know, I think some people that got a taste of this would begin to appreciate the value that it also brings in its own way.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's good. I think that's important. Okay. Just explain to us, I mean, we've touched briefly on it, but just explain to us the dining scene in Hong Kong today, because like you're saying, the operators have dropped quite considerably. And you know, you're saying by the end of the year that probably restaurant operators or hospitality operators will be down to 10,000, you know, operators, which is nearly a 50% drop from a couple of years before. Just explain to us the scene as it is today, and any standout restaurants and bars that you love and you enjoy visiting.
You know, the scene today, it was much gloomier a few weeks ago. So like I was saying, there's some light at the end of the tunnel where things are starting to get better. Social distancing, this talk of social distancing measures being relaxed a bit more. But going back to what I was saying earlier, where we believe that things are going to change a little bit in the dining scene. By that, I mean where you might start seeing more hand sanitizers, more temperature checks on a regular basis. You know, we are already in talks with our designers to have maybe some plexiglass split between some booths so that it creates this form of hygiene and distancing as well. And then, you know, as I think, you know, things aren't really like your typical, the SARS model was more of a V-shaped model in recovery where, you know, you sort of had a drop and then there was a steep, you know, sort of comeback. But because of the global impact over here, the disruption to the supply chain and how things are happening, we will be at sort of, the recovery is going to be slow. I think there is a unanimous agreement around that. So as a result of that, the dining scene will change in the sense where we will see lesser operators for some time. We will see, you know, lesser folks. We will see a change in behavior and protocol a little bit, which we are already experiencing, but it will stay for a little while. And the second part, you know, I don't want to sound like very cliche or anything. There's a lot of great people doing a lot of good work around in the community, and not to take anything away from anyone. But in my time and space, it's at the moment, it's barely been a luxury for me to go and dine at another venue or anything like that. So it's very hard for me to name anyone at the moment.
No, I understand that. I appreciate that. It must be an extremely busy time for you guys. Trying to get things, you know, working and trying to keep everyone safe must be a lot of effort and time.
It definitely is, you know. There's a lot of angles to it. It's an internal and external, you know. We have to make sure that we don't put our guests in harm's way, and definitely any of our team members, which is where, you know, the COVID-19 playbook has sort of become like our go-to Bible to it as well. You know, and we're very proud to share it with everybody. And, you know, everything from the hand washing and hygiene protocols and all those different things to even life hacks and, you know, helping our team members to how to navigate through this tough time. Because, you know, if there's a loss of income to people, giving them, you know, like, this is very interesting where there's a you know, a lot of people that come from the West, you know, like there's a more of a negotiation kind of a mentality over here.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I was going to ask you, because what the diners in the East and the diners in the West are very, very different, because I can imagine the dining experience is probably not one which a lot of people would enjoy, having to have their temperature checked, you know, hand sanitizer, wearing masks in the restaurant when they're not eating. I can imagine some people would think, or well, I know some people in the West would say, I'm not comfortable doing that.
Exactly, but I think there's sort of this social acceptance that has been created around this, where also originally in Hong Kong it was very common where even masks were, you know, commonly accepted. It was part of the culture over here, so we don't really feel that if people are wearing masks that it really has changed the culture too much.
Yeah,
more because when it was common practice before, I guess just because of the SARS era, that if somebody would have a cough or a cold, as courtesy, they would put on a mask.
Yeah.
So that piece just slightly, of course, has been elevated now.
Yeah, and I guess it's just a trade off of being able to go out. You know, it's just part of the luxury of being able to go out and dine in a restaurant. You've got to adhere to these couple of items in return for going out, which I guess that's why people accept it.
Definitely, you know, and it's also, I hate to use the word, you know, selfish or anything like that, because, you know, people definitely over here, what we really appreciate is there's nobody, even I can't even think of one person that, you know, has refused or feels offended in any way whatsoever. Everybody understands that, you know, if you know, a temperature is being taken, someone's being asked to wear a mask, sanitization is being done, health declarations are being asked for. It's for the benefit of the entire community.
Yeah.
So everyone is very appreciative of it.
Yeah, good. And you mentioned about potentially putting some, you know, glass partitions up and things like that. I noticed the guys from Yardbird, they did that, and they've obviously created that spacing as you guys have done, and I think they were just really happy to get the doors open. They were just really keen to get diners back into the dining room, but they said they're going to continue with the deliveries and things like that.
Definitely, and you know, that's why we're saying that those things are here to stay. So, you know, we have to figure out, you know, just better ways of doing these different things. There's things such as our fumigation services, for instance. We get all of our restaurants sanitized on a regular basis with a proper company. There's been recent talks about how the ventilation systems might be impacting or helping spreading the virus, so we're looking at making sure that, you know, the ventilation systems are disinfected and stuff. So I guess what we're saying is that, you know, there are going to be some different internal protocols that we are implementing and will regularly need to implement to make sure for a while that, you know,
and
nobody's put in harm's way.
Yeah, and in fairness, I think all those things, you know, they add value and make you better operators, don't they?
Exactly. And, you know, it's people, when they come dine at our restaurants, it's a trust factor. They put their faith in us as well, right? That we are making sure to do our best, that we follow all the protocols and not put anybody in harm's way. And that's one of something which is very core to our values as well. So
good.
We're just making sure that, you know, we're knock on wood, haven't had any such situation, and we don't have one.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Good. Tell us about your well-being, your health, exercise? What do you do to unwind and relax?
Yeah, I should do better at that. I'm not as too good at it, but luckily I'm in a sort of a space where I go run from restaurant to restaurant, or, you know, it's all physical activity, but not the same as, you know, going to the gym or anything. But one thing, I don't know if you, I think it was on a LinkedIn profile as well, is Dragon Boat is a huge part of, the Blacksheep community. So it's this sort of big event that we have in Hong Kong once a year. We were very gutted that, you know, it's been pushed back to September this year, but yeah, we actually spent almost close to half a year training for it. So training starts as early as 5 to 6 months. You know, we have, you know, about 50 to 60 people. You know, we're going every morning in a bus. We have practices, you know, twice a week. You know, we have schedules, we have our group, and, you know, it's sort of a, it becomes sort of a community sport. And we're proud to say that, you know, we won a couple of times within our division. And then, of course, the painful part of the story is last year we did not win. And up to this day, you know, it's a tough 3 a.m. conversation when we're asking ourselves what really happened.
Okay, well, that's good. And won't keep you too much longer. Last couple of questions. So if you had a time machine and you could travel back in time, you decide to the position you go to, but knowing what you know now, what advice would you give yourself starting out in the hospitality industry?
That is a tough one. You know, it's you just got to do what you love, to be honest, you know. And I think this is something that we very firmly believe in, because hospitality is not for everyone, and it's not really, if you're asking for advice, then you're in the wrong place. You know, it's not sort of a career choice, it's more of a calling.
Yeah. What resource, or what is there, a book or a resource or a podcast that you turn to for advice on a regular basis?
There's a lot of different resources. I mean, personally, I come from the world of finance, so, you know, I look at a lot of the online news blogs and things like those. But one thing that, going back to this whole notion of community, is that, you know, we have certain WhatsApp groups and chat groups, and there's communication is at the center of, you know, what we do right now. And I actually, and I think I can say it on behalf of a lot of my peers, most of the news that we actually get, interestingly, is as a result of sharing articles with each other. So we really feed off of each other. So we have a lot of this community-based sharing where, you know, by the minute people are forwarding, like, you know, different news blogs and articles and alerts and numbers and figures and facts. Right now, of course, the biggest topic is COVID-19 for everybody. You know, we don't send TikTok videos or anything like that to each other, but we definitely are sharing very sort of, you know, useful things that can help us with maybe how we can better service our guests, how we can become smarter at what we do, or allow us to better understand what potentially could be the next big thing that, you know, we need to be prepared for.
Okay, good. And that's a really good one. And finally, if you could host a dinner party with five people, living or dead, past or present, who, they can be anyone, who would they be and what would you eat?
You know, I had to, you know, really have to think about this one, because a lot of names come to mind, you know, when you're given a choice like that. But probably the real names that come to mind is, and that's more because of what we do, is people that, you know, have the hospitality giants, the people that have made hospitality very accessible to people. You know, you've got people like Jacob Marriott, you've got Richard Branson. You know, right now, if you look at Virgin Air and economy class on how accessible it has become, you've got people like Anthony Bourdain talking about, you know, your different food cultures. Like, I think I wasn't even a foodie and I used to watch his shows more because of how much I absorbed about the culture, and I enjoyed that aspect of his show as well.
Absolutely.
You've got Herb Keller, and you know, probably for me, of course, you've got the hospitality people, but then I would also would like to throw in one person such as Elon Musk, who, you know,
yeah.
who, you know, it's just his determination and, you know, this sort of will for innovating and stuff is also very admirable.
Yeah, very, very inspiring guy. And I guess there's always a fine line between a genius and a madman, isn't there?
There is, yeah, definitely is. Yeah. So that's where I think maybe we like to cause disruption, you know, in everything that we do. So I think that if I would have like four hospitality giants and then one madman or a genius like him in the room, it would be a good sort of balanced mix of, you know, hospitality, intelligence and disruption.
Yeah, sounds like a fun dinner party. Definitely. Sounds good. All right, mate. Well, look, thanks a lot for your time again and stay safe and...
Thank you.
Hope everything goes well.
Thank you. You as well. Be well. Thanks for reaching out.
Thank you.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye.